From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the summer of 2014 when a popular hashtag emerged on social media. The hashtag was Why I Stayed. It followed Janae Palmer Rice's decision to stay with NFL player Ray Rice after video of him knocking her out in an elevator went public. Using that hashtag, women were sharing stories of their struggles with domestic violence and the decision regarding to stay with or leave their abusers. Here's just one example. A woman tweeted with the hashtag Why I Stayed. Quote, I stayed because my pastor told me that God hates divorce. It didn't occur to me that God might hate abuse, too. Heavy stuff and part of an important national conversation. DiGiorno's Pizza, however, didn't quite grasp the seriousness of the Why I Stayed hashtag. Because DiGiorno's tweeted, quote, Why I Stayed? You had pizza. There was an immediate backlash. DiGiorno's apologized and explained that they didn't understand the hashtag's origin. Or you can look at a Minnesota store called Global Village that offered a sale on Martin Luther King Day on its Facebook page. Seriously, they offered 25% off of everything black. Or the New York Police Department, which tried to use social media to promote the good work it does. NYPD tweeted, Do you have a photo with a member of the NYPD? Tweet us and tag it MyNYPD. Their Twitter account was deluged with people posting images of disturbing police brutality. It wasn't long before people in other cities joined in, tagging their own police departments. We could go on. Social media is a powerful tool. Technology is a powerful tool. It can be used to build brands, increase awareness, make connections. But the missteps can be costly. Coming up on October 31st, a local conference aiming to help anyone who uses social media in their personal or professional lives. They'll have guests from Time Magazine, Marvel Comics, CNN, and local companies. Our panel this hour is previewing that event. It's called the Upstate Social Sessions, and you can still get involved. My guests include Alex Fitzpatrick. He's on the phone with us, the deputy tech editor at Time Magazine. Alex, how are you?
For having me.
Danielle Ramos here, our conference organizer, co-founder of the Rochester Brainery. Danielle, nice to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Steve Carter's in studio, a conference organizer and a co-founder of Explore Rochester. The ubiquitous Steve is in studio again. Nice to see you, Steve.
Yeah, nice to see you. Thanks.
John Elhart is the vice president of social and digital media at Dixon Schwabel. Nice to see you, John.
Great to be here. You got two Mets fans on the panel.
Two Mets. Alex is a big Met fan.
Huge Mets fan. That's right.
There you go. So it's nervous time for Mets fans.
It is nervous time.
It's always nervous time for Mets fans. Better be nervous than hopeless, I think, right?
You're talking to an Indians fan. We don't even have any time but losing time. Before we continue our conversation on what's coming up with the Upstate Social Sessions, I want to bring in Randy Gorbin, the news director of WXXI, just for half a minute to say hello and to say, well, what do you want to say, Randy?
Talk about my Yankees. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I can't this year. But anyway, we do want to say this effort is going on, our biggest pledge drive of the year, and we really need your support. You know, today, Evan, you've got a great panel talking about social media, and we've done a lot. Evan has done a lot with social media for this show, for Connections, getting people more involved, more interactive, more engaged. And that includes not only what you hear here on the air as Evan talks about the Twitter and Facebook accounts and what we're doing online, but also all the behind-the-scenes hardware and architecture that's involved in that. Again, it all takes support from you to help us with that. So if you could see your way to help us with whatever amount you can pledge, you could do that right now at 454-6300. That's 454-6300, or just go online, WXXI.org. Any amount is appreciated. And thanks for contributing to Connections.
Thank you, Randy. Randy Gorbin, WXXI News Director, 454-6300. All right, let's have this conversation about all of the positive that can come out of using technology and social media. Daniel Ramo, what is the goal of your upcoming conference, the Upstate Social Sessions?
Well, we wanted to have a large-scale social media conference in Rochester just because we felt that a lot of the businesses and individuals in the city and around Rochester would benefit for it, really to just learn a little bit more about how to positively use social media, use it for good, use it to benefit their businesses, use it to grow their career. There are definitely things that happen throughout the year where people can learn a little bit about that, but we really wanted to make an event and a whole day of learning about those tools.
And you can still register, sign up?
You can, yeah.
Where do you do that?
Yeah, upstatesocialsessions.com. We have a general admission ticket and also a student ticket as well.
upstatesocialsessions.com. It's coming up in a few weeks. And John Elhart, you know, we've talked about the way, you know, there's different ways to use social media. Companies try it try to use it to build brands, to reach new customers. I don't think DiGiorno's had the bad intention when they used that hashtag. They thought they were jumping into something cool. But what does that episode illustrate to you?
Well, it illustrates to me, you know, sometimes Sesame Street has the best lessons. I've been watching a lot of Sesame Street now because we have a two-year-old.
Yes,
yeah, one of my favorite segments on Sesame Street is the song they do, a stop and think skit. And so too many times we've seen companies not take the time to stop and think before putting something out on social media. It's a different time now. Your audience has a voice, unlike any time before, and you have to respect that voice, give them the opportunity to talk, to have these conversations, and at the same time, you have to think before you're sharing content. Mm-hmm.
Steve Carter, from what you've seen in the local community, what's your assessment on the local social media landscape? A lot of people are participating. Do most people use it effectively?
I think that it's trending upward. It's been such an improvement. There's like so many people on Instagram in particular, like through Explore Rochester, what we've been able to see, there's a community of people using social media for good and using it to appreciate where they live. And we're seeing businesses starting to use these way more effectively and to grow and to get awareness out of who they are. So it's trending upward.
Before I bring in Alex Fitzpatrick again, the deputy tech editor at Time Magazine, Daniel Ramo, just remind our audience who's listening now, your Upstate Social Sessions has, you know, really sort of impressive and well integrated to the community, the people from local companies, et cetera, the kind that we're talking to on the panel today. But you're also bringing in people like Alex Fitzpatrick from Time Magazine. Who else is coming from out of town?
Yeah, so we have a woman named Celeste Tabora. She's worked with Warner Brothers in the past. She's worked on movies and television and film and running social media for them. She's going to be there. A lot of experience in crisis management that she's going to be talking about, which is a good one. Would have been a good one for DiGiorno, definitely. We also have Adri Cohen from Marvel Comics, previous to Marvel. She worked for Google and did a lot of social for them as well. So she's been pretty into social media for quite a while. She's going to be talking about working with big brands. We have Caitlin from Brooklyn Brewery. She runs their social media. She's going to be talking about their social too. So lots of different people coming in.
And Alex Fitzpatrick, you're the deputy tech editor at Time Magazine. Tell us what that means for you. What is your role at Time?
Yeah, so most of my time, no pun intended, is spent on our website, time.com, basically overseeing and running a lot of our technology coverage. And that ranges from, you know, what's happening on social media to what are technology companies doing and hardware and gadget news, et cetera, and so on.
Well, do you have a bit of a local connection? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a Long Island native, but I went to Geneseo, got my BA there. So I spent 4 years in the Rochester area and interned at City Hall there. So somewhat of a tie to the Rochester area, sure.
I'm talking to Alex Fitzpatrick, the deputy tech editor at Time Magazine. Now, Alex, how do you assess some of these pitfalls? I've been reading a lot of the work of, for example, of John Ronson, who thinks that we pile on mistakes on social media too gleefully, that whether it's a Sacco, Justine Sacco, who famously lost her job and has since reemerged, or many others, that Ronson thinks that we are too gleeful to kick somebody when they make a mistake on social media. First of all, do you agree with that?
I do, yeah. I think there's a lot of truth in that. And the case that you just brought up is the case I would also highlight as a really good example of this, where somebody who was on a flight and said something stupid on Twitter before that flight had no opportunity to respond while she was on this transcontinental or transatlantic flight until she landed and suddenly discovered that there was thousands of people tweeting angry, vicious stuff at her. And yeah, the tweet was dumb and ill-advised, but, you know, did she deserve that necessarily? Probably not.
Is that an indication that, like John Elhart said, though, just because that is sort of the culture out there, we can work to curb that culture, but if that is the landscape, you really do need to stop and think, I guess.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is more people starting to realize, you know, there's this sort of concept of the vicious internet mob, and it piles on. But more people as individuals have started to realize lately, you know, no, wait, maybe, you know, if I see something that's a little bit dumb or a little bit, you know, ill-advised, I shouldn't just tweet out angrily because maybe this person is having a bad day or maybe there's some context here I don't know. And also, you know, maybe one day I will do the same thing and tweet a joke that somebody takes offense to. And so it might happen to me. So that sort of, you know, golden rule effect coming into play as well.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think if all of my worst moments
even private moments, things I've said in the office, if those were broadcast, tweeted out, and piled on, I'd probably be done too. You know, I mean, I think every one of us has been there. We've had bad moments. So I certainly take that to heart. The guy at UConn, you know, the drunk guy who was yelling at who wanted his mac and cheese, I sort of think he's getting what he deserved. But otherwise, I certainly take that point. Talking to Alex Fitzpatrick, the deputy tech editor at Time Magazine, who's on the line with us, I think it speaks well to Time, for example, Alex, that they've got someone like you. That, you know, not every media company is still, amazingly so, as forward-thinking and trying to assess the landscape of where we're going. You know, so this is your chance to kind of boost what Time is doing. They're your bosses, but what do you make of their efforts to try to look at the future, look at the present, where people are being reached, where to find an audience, and how to do that?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing for us because, you know, obviously we're this legacy media brand has been around for a long time, but and, you know, we print a magazine every week. We still do that. We're going to keep doing that. But at the same time, what we're finding is on social media, people tend to gravitate towards the brands and the names they already trust and recognize. And we have one of the most well-trusted and well-recognized news brands in the world. People see the red border, people see the T, and they know, okay, this is something I should pay attention to. So we've got that going for us already. So what we put on the internet carries a certain amount of trust, but also the fact that the internet is global. We have an amazing audience in places like India and Europe and so on and so forth, where we get, you know, a lot of visitors coming to our site from overnight in Eastern time terms. So we're sort of figuring out ways we can more tap into that as well.
Whether it's friends of mine who work at sort of legacy media brands, even in specialty genres like Wine Spectator, for example, they are trying to figure out how to make sure the next generation wants to purchase a physical magazine, but also how they can, you know, earn revenue online and reach new audiences. It's a hard equation. I mean, does Time meet with you privately and say, Alex, no pressure, but you have to reach a whole new generation for us to make sure we can keep selling magazines?
No, I don't think, like, it's not quite like that. I think it's something innate in me anyway, because I want to do that without being told, hey, that's my job now. You know, I'm a younger person. I want to reach younger people, et cetera. But I think a lot of what we do is sort of, you know, look at the magazine. I mean, yes, you know, not everybody's going to read it, but at the same time, I love reading this thing at the end of every week because the purpose that Time has served historically should still be the purpose now, and that is sort of telling you, you know, we say to our readers, you know, give us 30 minutes, give us an hour, and we'll tell you what's important in the world this week. And I think the rise of social media only amplifies the need for that because there's just so much noise out there and so much stuff that you probably don't have to care about that we still need somebody, whether it's in print or online, to say, no, hang on, don't worry about all that chaff. This is the stuff, this is the wheat. This is the stuff you really need to know to be an informed citizen and go about the world as such.
The cover story on the people, the young adults who saved the Obamacare rollout, was one of my favorites. It's a perfect example of telling a story that we hadn't heard up front and center when all that disaster was happening, doing it well, and then still, I think, in many ways, reaching younger audiences. So before I kick it around the panel, Alex, I want to follow up with you on something that my understanding is that you have been advising people to be careful about being cynical about teenagers, because it's easy to be cynical about teenagers, but they are the future customers, if not the current customers. And you've said we really ought to be listening to them. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I think you're probably referring to a video I did about, you know, sort of the rise of the YouTube star. Yep. And that whole phenomenon where you've got celebrities who have no TV deal, they have no book deal, et cetera. They've grown their own audience very organically on YouTube, and they cater to teens and tweens and young adults and so on. And it's, you know, I've seen a lot of older people sort of brush that off as like, oh, it's a fad, it's just teens being teens. But there's a real thing happening there, and eventually teens become young adults and adults who have purchasing power. Your habits, your browsing habits, your content consumption habits, they're formed when you're young. So the way that, you know, if teens are watching YouTube, these YouTube stars, and developing a relationship with them, they're going to follow those people, and that's sort of the content experience they're going to expect. And that's why, you know, TV companies, cable companies are in such trouble right now and trying to figure out, okay, what do we do to survive in the future? Because the way that people consume video content is just changing so rapidly because of the rise of these YouTube stars.
And Alex, when it comes to reaching that next generation and getting them to be customers, everyone on this panel today has a little bit of a different perspective and background in the work that they do. But let me start with you and then go around the panel. Do you think that, for example, for Time Magazine to survive, you have to sell physical magazines to people who are currently 16, 17, 18, 19, your future consumers. They seem to want something a little bit different. And I don't mean to say that no one's ever going to buy a newspaper, no one's ever going to buy a physical magazine, but somehow the equation is shifting in some way. What do you see the future of a successful Time magazine being in 10 or 20 years? You know, and the way it breaks down between that physical magazine versus online and finding content and revenue there.
Yeah, I mean, the decision whether how much longer we print a magazine is so far above my pay grade that I couldn't get into it with any kind of accuracy at all. You know, what I would say is I think we're moving towards a more blended experience where, you know, the level of content that we do in print and online and in video and so on and so forth, it'll all be the same top-notch stuff. So it's basically up to the consumer, the way that, and our reader, you know, if a reader wants to consume a print magazine, they can do that. If they prefer online video, we've got really great online video. So it's just a matter about, it's just a matter of finding our readers where they are and catering to how they want to consume content. That's been the big shift in journalism over the past decade or longer is, you know, now we've got a, for a long time, media outlets said, here's how you can consume our content. And this is the only way you can do it. But now we have to adjust, and our readers are saying, no, we prefer it this way, and we'll go to whoever's giving us content that way. So we have to, you know, play ball in that field.
Absolutely, Alex. And again, this may not be your job exactly with Time Magazine, but those people, especially the younger people who are saying that, may also be saying, I want to be able to go to Time.com. I want to be able to go to DemocratandChronicle.com. I want to be able to go wherever and get that video, and I don't want to pay. They don't even want to sit through ads. So we got to make money somehow, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big conversation that we're sort of having in the ad technology world right now because, you know, the new iPhones can block ads on mobile devices. So it's forced this giant sort of soul-searching come-to-Jesus moment for advertisers and publishers. You know, I think what's going to happen is, for a long time, you know, I don't think a lot of consumers have had this understanding that they get online content for free because it's this ad-supported model, and, you know, that's how we finance the stuff that you click on and enjoy and read, I hope. But I think, you know, maybe the scales have gone too far. I'm not speaking about Time.com, but just in general, internet advertising. Maybe things have gone too far in terms of, you know, the quality of ads isn't that great by and large. So I think we need to start talking about, you know, how do we make better ads that people actually enjoy, which I think is totally possible. I mean, people watch the Super Bowl for the ads, so it's totally possible to do ads that are good and enjoyable and well done and beautiful with, you know, photography and so on. But I think more focus needs to be on that and less so on just like, hey, come buy this laptop on Amazon or whatever it might be.
Talking to Alex Fitzpatrick, Deputy Tech Editor at Time Magazine. Now that you work at Time Magazine, does it change your own consumption habits, as in, would you prefer to buy an album versus getting the music for free online? Would you prefer to buy a newspaper as opposed to reading every article for free everywhere you can, Alex?
Well, it kind of depends for me. With albums, I'm a Spotify guy, so, you know, I have a small collection of vinyl just to have it. You know, I think just the ease of carrying almost unlimited music wherever I go and streaming it over the cloud, that's just too nice to pass up on for me. For $10 a month, that's great. But when it comes to news, I think there are certain things I pay for and subscribe to. I subscribe to the Times, to the Wall Street Journal, so on and so forth. But at the same time, I think, you know, I get a lot of really great content for free online too, because I know, you know, these content providers are making money off my clicks and off my, you know, sort of time thanks to advertising. So for me, it's just it hasn't really changed my content consumption. It just makes me think about the business model side a lot more.
Where I draw the line are the automatic audio ads. If I go to a website and I automatically get hit with an ad that has audio and I can't stop it, that makes me want to not buy the product or service and maybe say mean things about them.
on social media.
on social media. Do you disagree, Alex? I'm sitting here going, I have no idea if Time has forced ads on there. What do you think?
We do have some video ads, but I think, you know, what we're trying to do is make the quality of that content really high. So, you know, we're focusing a lot on video lately. You know, there is advertising related to that video, but I think it's all pretty good stuff. So we're trying to, you know, balance out the reader experience with the business realities in a way that's positive for the user and the reader.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, it is the future. We got used to, about a decade and a half after the internet, the advent of the internet, of finding everything for free. And now we do have to gear back and say there's a consequence to that. And do we want this content to be created at all? John Elhart's the Vice President of Social and Digital Media at Dixon Schwabel. So Alex Fitzpatrick, who we've been talking to, is at Time Magazine. Your company works with brands across the spectrum, you know, whether it's golf tournaments, local companies, product makers, et cetera. So it's a bit of a different conversation with you, John, but is it the, I imagine there are the same kind of battles that companies have in reaching younger and new customers, yeah?
No question about it. And through a lot of our work with the companies we're working with, it's to get them to think more like journalists, whether they be at Time Magazine, whether yourself, local reporters, whoever it might be, because journalists know how to tell good stories. People want good stories. They want good content. You can't just sell to people anymore, especially with that younger generation. You want to build that opt-in culture where your content, your stories are so good, people are actively seeking it out. You don't have to sell to them anymore. That's not an easy thing to do, but when you start to think more like a journalist, you can get there.
Do companies come to you at Dixon and say, we're going to need something to go viral?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
As if, like, there's
and
just
it is. Not all the time, because it happens a lot.
What businesses may not know is the John Elhart deal is you can pay, you know, whatever per month for just regular advertising, but then for a premium
we have our
fee,
viral package.
The viral package is a premium fee.
Yeah, and that is a tough discussion to have because, again, it goes back to that stop and think. What's your purpose? What's your strategy? Why do you want to go viral? And that's a tough thing sometimes for old school advertisers to think about because 20, 30 years ago, they had control of the message. Now it's your audience. Mm. And so your audience will decide if it goes viral or not. If you start the project with that question, it's probably not going to go viral. Again, good content, your audience will respond to it. It'll go viral.
Okay. Steve Carter, what do you think about companies trying to reach people like yourself, you know, younger consumers who can be there for years if they are effective with their messaging and their outreach?
Yeah, I find, like, for myself, I tend to tune out some of the companies that you just get that direct broadcast of sale. But ones that are truly, like, at the core adding value to what I'm trying to look for, those are the ones that I follow. And a lot of others, I know that's the same with them. And so, like, everything that I try to do, everything I work with, like, the different companies I've been working with, at the core, trying to add value through our content.
I even think about sports Twitter, as strangely as it is, being a Cleveland fan, a cursed Cleveland fan. Unfortunately, I think the Cleveland Browns Twitter is the worst. It doesn't really seem to react to the way people online are going to be feeling. For example, the Browns get blown out, and the next day, Twitter saying, Browns fans, for $1,000, you can have a meal at the 50-yard line with our team president. And what do they get? A deluge of tweets from fans saying, you wouldn't be worth $10 right now. You know, they're made fun of. They're laughed at. The content, even at least, you've got to soften that message. And it seems like some people approach social media with, this is what we're doing, we're not changing, to reach the audience, know your audience, know the moment. Whereas some sports Twitter is a little risky, but much more interesting. You know, Steve, you want to jump in?
Yeah, there was a risky one yesterday, I think. It was the Oakland A's tweeted a video, a vine of a home run ball landing in their stadium. And the home run ball was the one hit by Kyle Schwarber at the Cubs game because he hit it over the park. And right. So the Oakland A's responded with that. And that's like, you're not even tied in there, and you just made a trade like during the season or last year with them, which helped the Cubs make it to the World Series or make it to the playoffs. So that's a risky one, but people responded really well to that.
And I think people kind of like that. John Elhart, you're a sports fan. How do you think of sports Twitter, for example?
Yeah, you know, I think of sports Twitter almost in the sense that on Twitter, I like following the reporters better. So I have a Twitter list for Mets beat reporters. During the game, I'm seeing what they're posting. But on Instagram, I like following the Mets because they're getting me pictures of batting practice behind the scenes. One of the best Instagram accounts is made by Curtis Granderson. We follow Lucas Duda. You got to check it out. It's pretty fun.
And Curtis Granderson made it? He's the smartest man ever, by the way.
He's the smartest man ever.
He's amazing.
Yeah. And Lucas Duda, big-time introvert, doesn't really talk that much, and it's just them harassing Lucas Duda throughout. And so that's great. You know. So I will follow those types of accounts on Instagram to get that behind-the-scenes feel. And for Twitter, I like it more as a news source, and so I follow the beat reporters. Because to your point, a lot of times the sports teams, they're putting out a lot of sales messages that I, for the most part, don't care about on Twitter.
The new Twitter moments, add-on that they just recently updated with. Like, that's like a Snapchat story kind of feel. But I've been using that. I followed the Mets game on that. It's really cool. Like, pulling from beat reporters, pulling from fans to fill in your feed, and then it turns off once the game's done.
Yeah.
Alex Fitzpatrick from Time, when you're following different companies, brands, whether it's sports, elsewhere, on Twitter, do you find yourself thinking, they've hired somebody here that's very savvy, they're very smart, versus this company, it's like somebody who's been doing traditional ads for 35 years, jumped on Twitter and is trying to do the same thing. Do you find yourself able to discern pretty quickly?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a lot about, like you mentioned, about like tone and about language, and also just like knowing sort of Twitter culture or social media, whatever culture, you know, is sort of native to the platform you're using at that time. Because, you know, getting on Twitter, it's got its own language, it's got its own habits. It's just a weird place at first. So it's very clear to me when a brand has gotten somebody who's sort of been in that world for a long time and knows what's going on, knows the traditions, knows the lingo, et cetera.
Before I get to break, just one more sports Twitter question. The most controversial thing I saw this year was the Houston Rockets Twitter account. They were playing the Dallas Mavericks in the playoffs. And in Game 5, Houston was about to close out Dallas, and the Houston Rockets official team Twitter account tweeted, "Shh, it will all be over soon," with an emoji of a gun, an emoji of a horse's head. And the person who did that lost their job. I know, Alex, do you remember that?
I do. Yeah, I'm not a huge basketball guy, but I do remember, you know, reading about that and thinking about it a lot. And I think it's a little sad because I feel like the people that are given the keys to a lot of these accounts are probably younger people, maybe it's first, second job, and they're sort of encouraged, yeah, go have fun, you know, be part of that culture, be part of that world, and then there's no real clear delineation, no real clear line of what you can and cannot do. But you find out what that line is the second you've crossed it and suddenly find yourself out of work, which is a real bummer, I think.
Don't you think we could talk to that person and say, listen, you know, this blew up in a bad way? And my guess is they learned that lesson. You know, sometimes we make mistakes, whether you're in comedy. Sometimes you cross a line and you learn. But I don't know about losing a job. I mean, but as Alex said, that's what we see, and I wonder if that curtails risk-taking online. Let's get a short break in. We've been talking about what I want to talk about as the host of this program as we preview the Upstate Social Sessions coming up. When we come back after this short break, we're going to find out what they have planned for you on October 31st, how you can get involved, more about what the sessions are going to focus on. With our guests for the hour, on the line is Alex Fitzpatrick, the deputy tech editor at Time Magazine. Danielle Ramo is a conference organizer. She's also the co-founder of the Rochester Brainery. Steve Carter is also a conference organizer and the co-founder of Explore Rochester, and John Elhart, vice president of social and digital media at Dixon Schwabel. More straight ahead right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we sit down with the Green Party candidate for Monroe County Executive. Rajesh Barnabas will be in studio. He'll tell us why he wants to run county government and why he thinks the Republicans and even the Democrats have been doing a poor job of it. We'll talk to him about his philosophy on taxes, spending, priorities, and how to help those in poverty, and more next hour.
One College is trying to gather all sorts of teaching and learning data and provide it to professors before a student drops out of class or of school altogether.
We want to help them get there as much as possible because the data is not good if they don't do well on the first try.
Tapping into big data to improve learning, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And before we continue our conversation on the Upstate Social Sessions that are coming up, Randy Gorman, WXXI News Director, is back in studio. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Evan. And again, another fascinating conversation on Connections. And it's really interesting to hear your panelists, including Alex Fitzpatrick from Time Magazine, talking about how, again, with Time, you know, they're really trying to reinvent themselves, going to where their readers have been, and especially some of their younger readers now going online in a variety of different platforms. It's something we've tried to do at WXXI as well. Of course, I've been promoting our app, WXXI app, as well. One thing you can do with that app, Evan, aside from not only look at headlines and listen to the station, is you can donate. you know, there's a donate button on there, and that would be a good thing right now because we are in the midst of really our biggest pledge drive of the year. And again, to support all of these platforms and all the technology, we could use your help. Whatever you can do would be appreciated. You can either do it through the app, you can do it online on your desktop or your laptop at WXXI.org, or the old-fashioned way, just call. We've got operators standing by or sitting by really right now, glad to talk to you at 454-6300. That's 454-6300, so we can continue to be at the forefront of all this new technology. Evan?
Thank you very much, Randy. Okay. Randy Gorbin, WXXI News Director. We continue our conversation on the Upstate Social Sessions, and if you're just joining us, Daniel Ramo, remind our listeners what's coming up and when.
Yeah, so Upstate Social Sessions is going to be on Halloween at School of the Arts from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., filled with different sessions about using social media in your personal and professional life.
Okay, and to register, you do what?
Go to upstatesocialsessions.com and click on Get Tickets.
You're going to have fun with this. You guys are really ambitious about that. You've brought in some very interesting people. And again, if you're just joining us, we've been talking to Alex Fitzpatrick from Time Magazine, who's going to be there, but also people from various other parts of our community and elsewhere. Marvel Comics, where else, Danielle?
We have people from someone from Disney and Warner Brothers. We have some professors from RIT, someone from St. John Fisher. We have people who work for different news organizations. Now This, which is one that is news that's only posted online. So you can find them online, lots of videos and things like that. Lots of people that, you know, are both local, but also work on a national level, like Time Magazine and Brooklyn Brewery. And
why did you decide we need this conference now?
You know, we had been kind of, this is something that I've been thinking about doing for a couple of years and had kind of casually brought it up to people. And then finally this year in July, I got together with Leah and Steve and a couple of our other organizers and said, we have to do this year, just because, you know, there's a lot of different conferences that happen in regards to social media and content development and all of that. But nothing that's necessarily close enough to here, which people, you know, in my age group who might be working a full-time job, doing, you know, other things as well, they might not have the time to go to New York City for a long conference. They might not have the time or the money to travel. We wanted to do something that was here in Rochester that was going to be easily accessible for people in Buffalo, Syracuse, Rochester, Ithaca. There's so many schools. There's so many organizations that work in social media, advertising, technology in the area, and there's no reason that we felt why there shouldn't be something like this here.
All right, let's find out what they're planning. Alex Fitzpatrick, Deputy Tech Editor at Time Magazine, what will you be talking about when you're here in Rochester?
I think I'll be talking generally about social media and its use in the news and news gathering process and what it means for journalism, both, you know, from the journalist's point of view, but also the reader's point of view.
And tell me a little bit more about how you view the reader's point of view in that equation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's it connects readers to the journalists and the writers, you know, making the news, making the sausage, as it were, on a level that's never really been done before. Readers have always been able to, you know, send a letter to the newsroom and maybe try to get somebody's attention or, you know, call them up on the phone, and that's been done for a long time. But this is really, you know, I could be in the middle of writing a piece and somebody could be, you know, tweeting at me about my last work, and I'm thinking, like, oh, that's a really good point. I should address that in the next thing I do on the subject. And it really does inform my reporting and inform the way that I write and approach my work. So that's a really nice process that I'm glad exists.
Steve Carter, tell us about what you are excited about from the conference.
Well, I'm excited about how we're able to bring all these kind of people, different people from different backgrounds, different experiences, all to Rochester. I think that's really great to be able to have something like this quality here in the city. I'm excited, like John's talk, they're going to be recording a live podcast during that, mm-hmm. which is going to be great. And their talk, which you could get
for Dixon?
Yeah. So we're very excited about it. Yeah. Andrew Knobloch, who joined our social media team 2 years ago, does an agency podcast, a great example of content marketing, mm-hmm. doesn't sell Dixon Schwabel mm-hmm. at all, interviews yeah. people and mm-hmm. and people share their stories, and he's able to bring out wonderful stories that people are telling each and every day. So that's what his podcast is all about. And so, yeah, we're going to use our session as a live podcast that is then shared on our Dixon Schwabel properties. And we're going to focus on social media and ROI, mm-hmm. how you can use social media to help the bottom line? Because that's a question we get often from companies.
Right. I have it written down right here on my sheet. It was the next thing I wanted to talk about was ROI, because you know, I have no doubt, John, that this comes up, maybe not with every client, but your clients have got to be wondering, you know, what's the value for me to be online? I'm not on Twitter. Why should I be, et cetera, et cetera? And there isn't any, I don't think, not that I know of, an easy formula to explain it. So how do you walk them through that?
Yeah, so we, on a monthly basis, we will do analytics reports. And what are we putting in those reports? We're letting our clients know how many people we're reaching, who we're reaching, how are people engaging with the content, but then also what's their ultimate goal. So, for example, for the golf tournaments that we do social media for, their ultimate goal is ticket sales. So for the RBC Heritage, a PGA Tour event that we do the social media for in Hilton Head, we show them how Facebook and Twitter is working to drive ticket sales. And how do you do that? That's where the technology is has just grown by leaps and bounds over the past few years. I won't get too techie here, but we're putting things on the back end, pixels we call them, following people in their online path from how they see our content on Facebook and how that drives them to the ticket sales page. And then we can actually track what the dollar value of ticket sales is as a result of our Facebook, Twitter campaigns, Instagram as well. So that's one example of how we're showing the bottom line. It really starts with talking with companies, organizations to say, what's your ultimate goal? And then from there, we build out the plan on how we can achieve it.
Okay. And that is interesting to hear that you're tracking all the way through that process now.
All the way through.
Because even 5 years ago, I remember having conversations with people. Online sales and wine, I do some wine writing. That question comes up very often. People who, especially if you're a small business, and you're going, I don't have time to be on social media, do I? And then, and yet I've got people telling me, well, you don't have time not to be, or you can't afford not to be. And then you have to weigh all that out. So it's interesting that you're helping them work through the actual sort of dollars out of it.
Yeah, and we're doing that right now with PGA Championship. So the 2016 PGA Championship in New Jersey, where they're in their ticket sales campaign right now. We have campaigns going on Twitter and Facebook, and we're showing them dollar value based on the ads. And what's fascinating is, for example, on Twitter, we're doing a campaign targeting a golf audience in the New Jersey area, people who follow some of the top golfers. And then you can actually see what golfers are generating the most ticket revenue. So unfortunately, Tiger Woods, he doesn't make the cut much anymore. He didn't even make the cut in our ad campaign. We saw that Tiger was not bringing in ticket sales. We removed his followers from the targeting of our campaign.
Wow.
Yeah. He might come back someday.
It is it's amazing. My 3.5-year-old son knows the name of several golfers. He doesn't even know who Tiger is. The world has changed.
Oh, yeah. Dorian Spieth.
Right? Yeah, there you go. Daniel Ramo, tell me about what is on the menu coming up at Updates Social that we haven't gotten to yet.
Yes. So we're going to be talking about, we mentioned a little bit, we're going to be talking about crisis management. You know, you send out an unfortunate tweet. You didn't know it was going to be quite so unfortunate. How do you respond?
Yes.
How do you respond when you're managing that social for your own business? How to respond when you're managing social media for someone else's business? What do you do if you can't get in touch with them and you need to make a decision? All of those things we're going to try to cover in that session. We have one called Tweet, Drink, and Be Merry, Social Media and the Hospitality Industry. We're going to be talking about branding yourself, advancing your career through social media, just using it to, you know, promote your career, your writing, your, you know, a lot of people do it for their photography. That's something that Steve can definitely talk a lot about, and all the people in Explore Rochester that are, you know, taking all these great photographs, just using their phones or their, you know, their camera and then putting it online. And then also taking your online community offline and really using your online presence to build, you know, for social good and to also build your community just as a whole, whether it's a fundraiser, an event, you know, anything like that, scavenger hunt, just taking that online community offline and doing something really beneficial and positive with it.
Let me briefly ask the panel to follow up on the question of crisis management because, again, you know, it's easy for us to pile on, but there are so many examples. Talk about the use of photography. American Apparel, celebrating July 4th, they used on their Tumblr page a picture that the younger person, again, this is an adult, but again, as we've been saying, these are often people with their first or second job, as Alex said earlier this hour. He wasn't aware that the picture he posted was actually the Challenger blowing up. And that, he thought it was fireworks. And that obviously did not go well for them. And they took the picture down, et cetera. Here is another example. A New York City hotel called Union Street Guest House Well, they had a policy of fining wedding guests $500 for any negative social media posts and online reviews during a wedding weekend until the public found out, in which the hotel claimed it was all a joke. So you have these crises moments that happen. Sometimes it's just an accident. You know, a young person, I didn't know it was a Challenger. I don't know how you wouldn't know, but still. But the question is, what do you do about it? So let's kind of go around the panel. Alex Fitzpatrick, if you make a mistake, and we all do, and I certainly have, do you delete it? Do you own it? You know, what's the most effective way? What's the short answer that you would have if you're answering that generally?
Burn down the computer and go right to the bar.
Perfect.
No, in seriousness, I think you got to own that stuff. When there's something bad, it depends on sort of the level of severity of terribleness that whereupon it falls. But if it's sort of in that mid-range, the best thing you can do is delete the tweet, delete the post, and then, you know, send out a follow-up like, hey, you know, that was sent out in error, or that is something we should not have said. We apologize for anybody who was offended, so on and so forth, and then just leave it and move on. The nice thing about the internet is that there is one of these mess-ups almost every day, and people have a very short memory about them. So generally speaking, you know, if it's your fault, you feel awful about it, and obviously you don't want your brand associated with anything like that. But you should also remember that most people, by the time they wake up the next morning, probably won't remember it.
John Elhart, what do you do?
Yeah, you definitely have to own it. Don't delete the tweet. That makes it worse because people have an easy way to take a screen grab and make it go viral. You want to go viral? Delete a tweet. That would be if you make a mistake. We have an example where we work with some telecom clients, and as you know, there's going to be people that complain about them on social media. To the credit of the companies that we're working with, they will engage in conversation. They don't ignore it. They want to help their customers. One example, I never realized how popular the Hallmark Channel is. There was a Hallmark Channel outage. The number of people complaining about it on social media was unbelievable. And so what did the company that we worked with do? Once they got the service back, we took notes, put a list together of everybody who complained about it, and then sent them in the mail a Hallmark Channel care package. I'm not sure what that entails, but it made them happy. So that's an example of taking a negative situation, listening to your audience, helping them out, turning it into a positive.
Even some of the worst possible moments probably have a window to actually turn positive, don't they, John?
They really do, and that's why I always say if you want to be on social media, you have to be ready for the two-way conversation. And yes, you can turn a negative into a positive pretty quickly. And as Alex said, people forget about it the next day. We're in a world where there's so much information that they will forget about it quick, but you can actually make them remember you in a positive way by listening to them and helping them out.
Now, the famous movie speech on how to sell was Alec Baldwin and Glenn Ross, I think. The always be closing, right? Always be closing, which has too much profanity to be able to play that clip on the show today. But I actually think that was before the advent of some of this stuff that we're talking about. I mean, Alex Fitzpatrick, I doubt you're going to do a good job for your brand at Time Magazine if half of your tweets are asking people, hey, have you subscribed yet? You know, I mean, how do you view the way that has evolved? The question, always be closing, make a sale. Social media seems to be a much softer way to target people, I would think.
Yeah, I think it's soft power versus hard power. You know, I don't think I would ever say, hey, go subscribe to our magazine unless it's got a really great feature in a magazine. And then I might say, hey, you know, my new piece is out on newsstands. Like, here's a little snippet. You know, go get the magazine for the rest of it. But I think generally, by and large, the approach is, you know, just make your brand associated online with really top-notch content, and maybe that drives subscription sales, you know, indirectly.
Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, one of my former clients was a coffee shop, and that one we've grown to like over 14,000 on Instagram. And just like off the top of your head, if you think of a coffee shop, you're probably going to think of this one. So I think that's part of it, is just getting the association out there, the brand awareness, and then there's value in it. Like whatever you're offering, you let them know, and that informs them and makes their purchasing decisions easier.
Part of our audience may be hearing this conversation and may be thinking, you know, and I understand it. Well, we're too addicted to social media, whether it's personal or professional. You know, we hear it all the time. I hear it from listeners. I hear it from people I meet who say, you know, I can't even get together with friends or in a dinner party anymore with people who are not constantly on some sort of social media. And I understand the negative view of it. But Alex Fitzpatrick, deputy tech editor at Time Magazine, in reading your work and following some of your work, I tend to think if you're someone that thinks technology can be a force for good. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think by and large it is, but I also think it's a tool, and I think like you said in the opening of this broadcast, you know, a hammer is a tool. You can use it to build a house or bash somebody's face in. It just depends on what you do with it, sort of a neutral thing. But I think, you know, the experiences that I've had on technology, by and large, pretty good. I've made real friends over Twitter who I've met in real life later and now consider some of my closest friends, Facebook too, video games as well. So that's been really nice. I connect with readers on a more personal basis, so on a professional level, that's great. I've had networking opportunities. I got my first job, essentially, through Twitter. So that's been a boon for me. And actually, you know, my mom's on there, and that's probably how we communicate more than anything else right now. You know, she reads and favorites my tweets all day from work. We've talked about this weekend, actually. She mentioned how much she loves that because it's a way for her to just kind of keep tabs on what I'm up to without me having to call every day.
One of the organizers for the upcoming Upstate Social Sessions is Danielle Ramo, who's been with us in studio for the hour. She's the co-founder of the Rochester Brainery, so that's how you know Danielle. And you can attend the conference. Admission $50, $30 for students. It's all day, nine to four.
Nine to five, 45, something like that. Right in between.
9 to 5 at the school at the School of the Arts on Halloween, Saturday, October 31st.
Yes.
And Danielle, I tend to think, I'm wondering if how you feel about this. I tend to think of us as sort of exiting our infancy with the ubiquity of technology. You go back to, I was a senior in high school when I sent my first email, and I'm glad that I sort of didn't grow up with it because I'm in that cross generation that grew up without it, but now it will always be there. You know, my son will always be there. You know, Emerson will always have it, right, John?
Sure.
There will not be a world without it, and that's just how it is going forward. So resisting it is sort of pointless, but I do think, like anybody with a new toy, humanity didn't have this before, and now we do. I remember telling Steve Jacobs from RIT, why do people need internet on their phones? A phone is for a phone. A computer is for the internet. This is never going to work. I felt like Albert Brooks in Defending Your Life saying that Casio was going nowhere. Bad investment. So now it's everywhere. And we just have to figure out how to make sure it doesn't over-dominate our lives, our social scenarios. And I think we're in that process. We're having these conversations. How do you view it, Daniel?
Well, I think that, you know, it's possible to use all of these tools personally and professionally and benefit from them without it taking away from, you know, you don't have to be on Twitter 6 hours a day reading every tweet. Mm-hmm. That's what lists are for. You know, you can go on every once in a while and you can say, okay, well, you know, I want to make sure that I'm talking about this today, whether it has to do with your brand or personally, you want to find out what's going on in the game, you know, something like that. You can go on and you can use those tools so you can keep up. You can positively contribute to conversations, start new conversations without letting it completely overrun your life. And I think it's just a matter of finding that balance, which is important.
And that's kind of like the last session of the day. Mm-hmm. That's really going to be like the focus of it, is how you could transcend just like these apps, these social media apps, and take it in the community, take it to real life. And like, that's what we've been able to do with Explore Rochester. And that's our goal, is to really get people excited and connected offline as well. So,
John?
Yeah, I would say nothing beats face-to-face communication and connections. And so as great as social media is, we all love it. As great as technology is, there is a way to make sure you're not using it too much. I feel bad in that there now when I watch TV, it's really hard for me to watch TV without having the phone in my hand at the same time. Yeah, I'm trying to make small steps just to be able to do one thing instead of having both going. So moderation, that's the key.
Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the moderation aspect. I tend to see myself as a little bit addicted. Like, I recognize it in myself, and I try to take steps to, you know, walk away and take a step back from Twitter and other social media when I can. But what's interesting is I've noticed this trend of actually tech gadget manufacturers talking about, you know, how to keep you more in your own world rather than sucked into social media and into technology. I've got the Apple Watch. It's actually nice because I can just sort of look at a message and say, oh, I can get to that later, rather than pulling out my phone and getting sucked in. and Microsoft at an event last week was talking about these new features that you know, they say will keep you more connected to the people around you rather than the people on Twitter and whatnot. But I think it's really just a matter of being cognizant that, no, you don't need to be connected 100% of the time. It's there when you need it, but you know, it's probably better to go outside and take a step around for a little while.
All right, we've got a minute left, so you're all on the spot here. I'm going to start with Alex. One person, one Twitter account, can be a person, could be a brand that you love following, that just for either their humor, their sharpness, their use of social media, it could be anything in the world. Alex?
Oh, boy, really putting me on the spot here. Let's see. I think Jared B. Keller, he's a friend of mine who now works for Maxim magazine here in the city. Just really funny, really witty guy, pretty entertaining Twitter feed.
Okay, John Elhart.
I will say, kind of old school, Jerry Seinfeld. You know, so this speaks to how it's not just social media, it's what you're doing off of social media too, but Jerry Seinfeld's great, especially promoting his new series, but he doesn't do it in a way that really promotes it. He's showcasing the cars.
Cool.
And he's a Mets fan, so I had to work for him.
Steve Carter.
Well, Danielle and her.
We're like fighting over who's going to say it now.
Go ahead. Yeah. Do you have the same one?
We have the
yes.
same
oh,
one, yeah.
On.
Denny's Diner.
Denny's Diner.
Their Twitter account is the best Twitter account out there.
Where are they?
Denny's, like.
Oh, Denny's.
Yeah.
The restaurant.
Yes.
Hilarious.
It's the yeah. Grand Slam platter.
Oh,
show.
Yes.
It's
you need
hilarious.
To see their Twitter account. Yeah. It is the best one out yeah. there.
I haven't been in a Denny's since about 3 a.m. 19. Never mind.
still.
That's half of what their Twitter feed is about.
Alex Fitzpatrick, deputy tech editor of Time Magazine. See you in Rochester on the 31st. Thanks for your time today, Alex.
You got it. Thank you.
John Elhart from Dixon Schwab. Always fun, John.
Always fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Steve Carter, Explore Rochester. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Danielle Ramo, tell us the website one more time.
UpstateSocialSessions.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at Upstate Social, Instagram at Upstate Social, and use the hashtag UpstateSocial15.
Have fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Short break and more connections straight ahead.